Hello and welcome to Season 2 of the Breakout Hockey Program. My name is Adam Summers, and as always, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us here on the program. So, it's been a little bit longer than I think I had anticipated in coming back and doing another episode. I know I had talked about at the end of June, early July, that we would do shows throughout the summer, and I apologize for not doing that. While I certainly did not take much, if any, time away from following hockey in general throughout the course of the summer, I guess I needed more of a break from doing the show than I realized. I guess until I get to the point to where doing shows like these can be my full-time job, between real-life work commitments, between doing the other radio show that I do with Mike Sempervivi, that being the Audio Nightmare, and just a lot of other things needed to take a little bit of time away from the program, but fear not, we are back. And along those lines, I'd like to throw a few things out there before we get started on this week's show. A few housekeeping items. As always, you can send me an email, comments on anything hockey-related, questions, suggestions for topics on the show, all of those things. Send an email to breakouthockey@radiostar.com. That's breakouthockey@radiostar.com. Or, as always, you can follow along on Twitter @Adam_Summers. Again, that's @Adam_Summers. Really, either way, you can get a hold of me. Either way is good. Also, toying with the idea of creating a Facebook page for the show and possibly a dedicated Twitter feed for the show. Just trying to decide whether, particularly with the dedicated Twitter feed, if that would, if there'd really be a lot of value in that, because pretty much on my regular Twitter feed, I don't talk about a whole lot else other than hockey, strangely enough. But we'll see. May end up doing that. Also, if you recall last year, we held the Breakout Hockey Pool, a Yahoo Fantasy League for myself and listeners of the program. I ended up winning that last year. Very close matchup, but I did end up winning that. No shenanigans. I did end up winning those, so we are going to do Season 2 of that. As last year, it is going to be an auto draft more than anything, because it's very difficult to be able to get however many people, maybe 10, maybe as many as 16 people together at one time to do a draft, particularly when you've got people in, at least last year, people in pretty much every time zone in the U.S. You also have the potential, actually the very high likelihood of people in this pool from Europe as well, so obviously in Canada, all across North America. So because of that, we are going to do an auto draft again, probably a couple of days before the start of the regular season. My guess would be I'll set up the auto draft to take place right at the end of the preseason. So for those of you that were in the pool last year, you should have received a invite from Yahoo to join back up. If you have not, for some reason, it may have gone into your spam folder. Check your spam folder, or if you did not get it and you were part of last year's pool, shoot me an email again at breakouthockey@radiostar.com. Or I have several spots open, not a ton, but I do have several spots open for new players in the Breakout Hockey Pool. So if you are interested in being a part of that, get an email to me as quickly as possible, and I, if I still have spots open, I'll let you know, and I'll send you an invite, and we can get started. So we'll definitely reference that a little bit more throughout the year on the show. Plan on keeping up with that. I'll make the league viewable so that even if you are not a part of the league, you can take a look if you are interested for some reason in following along with the Fantasy League throughout the course of the season. So we'll do all of that going forward. As far as the show itself, the plan, as always, is to be weekly. More often than not, that will be the case. However, I'm sure there will be times where every other week may come into the equation. I really do plan on keeping the shows shorter this year, keeping them right around 30 minutes for my own sanity's sake, and I just think also from a lot of the podcast research that I've read and just knowing the type of stuff that I like to listen to, about 30 to 35 minutes I think is where, I think that's where people's attention span starts to wane. So that is the goal, such as it is, to keep the shows a little bit shorter. I don't want to dwell too much on the tragedies this summer, only because A, everybody has given their opinion on it, and B, it's just too hard, particularly with the locomotive tragedy. I can't recall a sports story, a tragedy involved with sports hitting me harder than that story has. I'm 30 years old. I've been watching sports as long as I can remember, and I don't know. That story is just, anybody who knows me knows I am not a big fan of flying. I am not a big fan of getting on a plane and traveling somewhere. I tend to avoid that unless absolutely necessary. So for that reason alone, the story hit me hard. And then just the idea that, and I talked about this a little bit with Mike Sempervivi on our show a few weeks ago, but obviously, first and foremost, the story is the most tragic for the people that were on the plane, that being the crew, the team, which included the coaching staff, the training staff, the equipment staff, all of that. Obviously, it's the toughest for the team, for their families. But just thinking about it from a fan perspective, I cannot imagine how I would react or just how difficult it would be if my entire team, one of the teams that I follow, particularly a hockey team, if my entire team was just gone one day, and just not to be too macabre, but just to imagine that, you know, people that you follow on a daily basis going in that way is just really something you really try not to think about too hard, because it's really obviously very disturbing and very sad. So between that, between the tragedies involving Derek Boogaard, Rick Rippon, Wade Bielak, just a very difficult hockey summer, and I think everybody is ready to get back going with the hockey season and just get some good, positive thoughts as opposed to a lot of what's been going on throughout the summer. Personally, myself, my live hockey attending experience has already started in earnest. Last weekend and this weekend, actually, the last two Saturdays, I've been able to attend USHL preseason games. The Chicago Steel was lucky enough, actually, to see a game about 4 miles from my house. The Chicago Steel came and played out in suburban Chicago, out in Orland Park, Illinois, last Saturday. And then about 20 miles away in Darien, Illinois, they played last night as I record this on Saturday night. So took in those games. Highly entertaining hockey. I certainly recommend checking it out if you have a USHL team or game anywhere near you. And then also attended the Chicago Blackhawks Training Camp Festival, the first day of training camp yesterday at the United Center, which was quite the scene. Each year it becomes a little bit more polished of an event, and last year, yesterday afternoon, I should say, even more so. As in previous years, you had the first team practice, you had a couple of intra-squad scrimmages. They went a little bit more all out this year in terms of the presentation. They had the full game, you know, game day presentation, including the much ballyhooed Jim Cornelison national anthem being performed live, which was very entertaining, as always. So a good day. It felt very good to be back in the United Center and to be back around a hockey rink in general. So with that, I actually want to get into division previews, which I promised that we were going to do. Basically, going to do that over the course of the next three episodes, one division from each conference, going to run it down a little bit. And also, some of this, I guess, will become a little bit evident as we run through the divisions. But at the end of all that, before the season starts, we will do our conference preview, which will be pretty much the same as far as last year, where we'll go through 1 through 7, who will be 1 through 7 in the conference. We'll also go through who will be 11th through 15th. And then to close out the conference previews, we'll talk about those bubble teams, that 8th through 10th, and who will really be battling for the last playoff spot in each conference. And I think throughout the course of this whole process, the next few weeks, I at least think some things will unfold as far as I guess some commonly held notions about each conference that in some ways are true and in some ways aren't true. So I think all of that will play out over the next few weeks. So, along those lines, going to preview a division in each conference. As I mentioned, we're going to look at the Southeast Division, such as it is, really four Southeast teams, and the team that is certainly not in the Southeast of North America. Going to talk about that, and then in the Western Conference, we are going to talk about the Northwest Division. So I guess we will take the divisions that are the farthest most in either direction, apart from each other. So, with that, we will get into the Southeast Division. I am going to count down, or I guess count up, from the bottom of the division up. And I apologize in advance to Winnipeg Jets fans. Those of you who, I'm sure you are very, very thrilled to have your team back. I'm actually thrilled that you have your team back. I like the jerseys, as a side note. I know some people do, some people do not. I actually think they're pretty sharp. I guess I'm in the camp of some others, and I'm a bit of an outsider, obviously, here, being in the United States, but I probably could do without the overt militarism that is being foisted upon the team as well. But I do like the color scheme. I do like the jerseys, and I'm sure it's going to be very exciting to have your team back in Winnipeg. But I'm not entirely sold on this team on the ice. Combination of what we saw last season, where. And this has been sort of the commonly held notion that the Atlanta Thrashers had this great start to the season and then tailed off at the end. That's not what happened. They had a average start to the season at best. They had a incredible run, really, in the middle portion of the season, maybe the middle third of the season, where they looked like they were absolutely for real. And then the last part of the season, they really, really fell off the map hard. As a team, and some of their star players, most notably Dustin Byfuglien, who, if you recall, in the middle third of the season, people were really talking about Dustin Byfuglien as being a potential Norris Trophy candidate, based mostly on his very high offensive output through that part of the season. He really struggled towards the end of the year, and a lot of the team mirrored that. I think the combination of what we saw at the end of last year, the fact that you've got a group of players that have all been together, but you're coming into a new city, completely new organization, new coaching staff. I think that it's prime for Winnipeg to, even though they're going to have unbelievable crowd support, I think it's prime to be a bit of a difficult start to them. Off the top of the season, you factor in the travel, and you factor in what I actually think is going to be a pretty competitive Southeast division. I mean, it's not necessarily the strongest, the biggest powerhouse division in the league, but I think it's a far cry from the Southeast division that we've heard many people refer to it as over the course of many years. So I think they're going to have a difficult run. I mean, when you look at their depth charts, and I'm going to refer to the Hockey News yearbook, again, as I like to use that phrase, such as it is. I mean, take it for what it's worth. But, I mean, when you look at their depth down the middle, their depth at center, Brian Little, nice player. I'm certainly not going to assail him, although I don't see him as a top-line center. Nick Antropov is your second-line center, which, again, I'm... To say I'm not high on Nick Antropov is probably an understatement. Alexander Burmistrov, very good young player. I think the jury is out on him in terms of whether he is going to turn into another one of those guys that, you know, and this is something that Atlanta has done, and hopefully Winnipeg doesn't continue to do, but it's something Atlanta did really for several years in a row in recent years of really rushing their top prospects, their number one first-round draft picks. You have Burmistrov slotted third line, Slater slotted fourth line, so... Not exactly an imposing group up the middle. Ladd and Wheeler likely to be on that top line. I mean, that isn't a bad top line, but to me, things drop off considerably from there. You have Antropov with Evander Kane, which I think this is a pretty important season for him. Eric Fehr, this is going to be an opportunity for Eric Fehr to really reach the scoring potential that he showed in juniors and is not really... he's not really been able to translate that to National Hockey League offensive success. Hockey News protecting Patrice Cormier and Chris Thorburn, along with Burmistrov on the third line. Fourth line, Tanner Glass, Jim Slater, Carl Klingberg. And again, these are depth charts. You may see a guy like Ben Maxwell, Tim Stapleton, guys like that could work their way in. But to me, it's all a lot with this team, and this was a big issue with them last year. Defensively, 29th in the league, goals against 3.20. As we mentioned, also offense, 20th in the league, 2.66. Most of the players returning. You've got a top six, a projected top six, of Toby Entschemann and Dustin Byfuglien. Should be a solid D pair. I know there's questions about Dustin Byfuglien's physical conditioning and really his legal status coming after the boating incident a few weeks ago. But I think Byfuglien and Entschemann will be fine. Zach Bogosian, who just got I believe it was a new two-year deal. This is in some ways, I still think a make-or-break year for him. Zach Bogosian and Ron Hainsey, if Bogosian can turn into the player that he was projected to be when he was drafted, that should be a real solid second D pairing. Johnny Oduya and Mark Stewart, third D pair. And then you're coming back again with Andre Pavlik and Chris Mason. So, to me, obviously, you've got the team back. That's enough cause for optimism, but I'm not sold that they're going to be able to make enough headway to really, really change things all that considerably moving forward. Now, fourth in the division, I have a team that I think even the most ardent fan of that squad is going to need a program, a media guide. They're going to need quite a bit to keep track of the Florida Panthers. Also, somewhat ironically, taking away the mantle of Blackhawks Southeast Division away from the former Atlanta Thrashers as the Florida Panthers. You look at the new arrivals, Chris Versteeg, Thomas Fleischmann, Sean Bergenheim, Thomas Kopetsky, Marcel Gotch, Matt Bradley, Jose Theodore, Brian Campbell, Ed Jovanovski, not to mention the potential of Erik Gudbranson making the team. I would think it's very likely he does after really he had a good enough camp last year to make the squad, but they couldn't come to financial terms on an entry-level deal. Also, Jonathan Huberdeau, who by all accounts impressed in rookie camp. It's hard to see in some ways when you look at the lineup where he could slide in, but it's also, I certainly don't think that when you look at some of the fourth liners on the team, it's not as if they're their roles are etched in stone. So if Jonathan Huberdeau comes out and just blows everybody out of the water, there very well could be a spot for him on the team. I actually think, and we'll get into this in a couple of weeks when you run through the conference, even though I have the Panthers fourth in the division, I think that they are going to be possibly on the outskirts of contending for a playoff spot. And this is going to be a theme we're probably going to talk about over the next few weeks, where there were a lot of teams that went out and made wholesale changes, but I'm not entirely certain that that made them any demonstrably closer to being a playoff team or a Stanley Cup contender. And I think Florida falls into that same realm. They went out and acquired a lot of good, average to very good players, but I don't know that there are really any true game breakers on this team, really, until Jonathan Huberdeau and Erik Gudbranson matriculate to being NHL players. I mean, I think those are the guys that have the chance to be true top-end players. There's certainly, if you look at the guys that left, Thomas Vokoun, that's the one area where I think they're obviously downgraded in, is goaltending, Theodore and Clemensen. We shall see. Obviously, also Jakob Markstrom in the mix, the young Swedish prospect goaltender. But Vokoun gone, Olesh gone, Reasoner, Bergfors, Hordachuk, Solzer, and Duko. The guys they brought in to replace them are, in almost all instances, improvements. A big part is going to be chemistry. It's going to be very difficult, I think, for this team to mesh early on in the season. Obviously, you have the former Blackhawks. They won't have too hard of a time meshing together, but you look at projected lines, Weiss, Booth, and Upshaw. That's a solid first line, but again, to me, that's, if you're on a really good team, that's a good second line. Also, Thomas Fleischmann, Chris Versteeg, and Jack Skilly. Doesn't exactly blow me away. I actually, I'll be very interested to see if Skilly plays that high up in the lineup. Kopetsky's pretty pretty versatile. I wouldn't be surprised to see Kopetsky move up into that slot maybe. Bergenheim, Santarelli, and Evgeny Dodonov. And then they have the projected fourth line of Kopetsky, Gotch, and Bradley. Defense, they should be considerably improved. Brian Campbell, I think, while they needed to get that contract to that was a big part of them getting above the salary floor. I think it's a good fit in terms of there's guys like Jason Garrison, Dmitry Kulikov, Keaton Ellerby, possibly Eric and Branson. Guys like Brian Campbell and Ed Jovanovski are going to be, I don't want to say mentors because that's overused, but I think they will be good examples for those young defensemen. So an improved year in some ways for the Panthers, but I don't know that that gets them any higher than fourth in the division. Also, Southeast Division, Carolina Hurricanes. This is a team that I'm not going to tip my hand here, but I mean, they're going to be, obviously, if I have the Panthers in the mix and the Hurricanes are above them, the Hurricanes are going to be in the mix, I think, as far as the playoffs are concerned. Again, it's a team that actually, in some ways, we're able to keep more guys than I know I expected, at least. Still, some big-time departures, some goal scoring, some size that they are going to be missing out on, particularly Eric Cole, the main loss up front. Also, on the back end, Joe Corvo, although by bringing in Thomas Cabrelet, they feel like they were able to replace that. Projected lines, Stahl, Jokinen, and Ruutu. Or at least projected depth chart. Also, Brandon Sutter, Jeff Skinner, and Anthony Stewart, who's coming over from the former Atlanta Thrashers. They have Zach Dalpe, the rookie. Also, Chad LaRose and Alexei Panikarovsky is the third line depth chart. And Tim Brent, Patrick Dwyer, and Zach Boychuk as your fourth line. So, really a solid top two lines, but it's going to be interesting to see. You almost think that they're going to be, depending on Anthony Stewart, in some ways to really step up and take some of Eric Cole's minutes, take some of his production. I think that might be a little bit too much to ask of Anthony Stewart. You look at the back end. Again, it's in some ways it's really – it's not a huge change from last year. I know a lot of people are down on Thomas Cabrelet, but I think this Carolina is actually a perfect fit for him. There isn't much talk about the fact that his brother played for the Carolina Hurricanes. He was one of the deciding factors in convincing Thomas Cabrelet to come to Carolina, and I think that it's going to be a good fit for him. A rabid fan base, to be sure, but not a crushing media presence that obviously was present in Toronto and to maybe a slightly lesser extent in Boston. You look at their defense depth chart, Pickenin and Gleason, then McBain and Cabrelet, also Brian Allen and Derek Joslin. I would not be at all surprised to see Justin Falk take one of those spots, bump one of those guys out, whether it be Allen or Joslin. We shall see. But again, I think this is a team that is solid. There are going to be problems scoring. Last year, 12th actually, which actually surprises me looking at that. Be interesting to see, again, with that top line of UC Okun and Eric Stahl and Tuomo Ruutu, at least projected. Be interesting to see if that's enough to get the job done. Goaltending-wise, Cam Ward obviously will be getting the bulk of the starts. However, I think the acquisition of Brian Boucher, who, again, can be up and down, but a much more proven backup goaltender than Justin Peters, you would have to think that Paul Maurice will have a little bit more confidence in maybe getting Brian Boucher out there for 15 to maybe even close to 20 games, as opposed to what we've seen over the last few years with Cam Ward just playing way, way too much and kind of fading towards the end of the season. Second in the division, and I hemmed and hawed over this one, and again, being second in the division doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to be less playoff successful than the division leaders here, but the Tampa Bay Lightning, I think, will pretty comfortably finish second in the division. I think you're going to see a big gap between the top two teams in the Southeast and the bottom three in that division. When you look at Tampa, again, not mean, you look at it, there are some changes, but I don't feel as though they are crippling changes in any way. You look at Simone Gagné being gone, but Simone Gagné, I don't know how great his impact really was with Tampa, and I don't think there was a great expectation on their part that he was going to be back, so it's not as if this is a surprise. Mike Smith being gone, really when you look at who they replaced him with in terms of Matthew Garon, I view that as an upgrade. Also, they have young Dustin Tokarski waiting in the wings, but he's probably still a few years away. Sean Bergenheim no longer being in the mix in Tampa. A great playoff performer, but again, this is a guy who, for as good as he looked in last year's playoffs, he's never been a real strong regular season performer. So I don't know. I mean, again, come playoff time, they're going to miss him, but it's not a crippling blow. None of the other losses that they had, Lundin, several others, I don't think are huge losses. You look at their top three centers, and to me, with Stamkos, Le Cavalier, and Moore as their top three centers, that's pretty darn good. I mean, you have guys like Ryan Malone, obviously Marty St. Louis, Teddy Purcell, Nate Thompson, possibly flanking Le Cavalier on the second line. And then you look at the defense. To me, this is one of the more underrated defenses in the league. 21st overall last year in the regular season. But I think a lot of that is skewed by the goals against before they got Dwayne Roloson. The goaltending situation there was certainly not stable. Dwayne Roloson did stabilize it. Now, you look at your top six defensemen, Brewer, Hedman, Kubina, Oland, Clark, and then Marc-Andre Bergeron, who, again, is not the best defensive defenseman by any stretch of the imagination, but he certainly adds a lot on the power play. It'd be interesting to see if anybody steps up to challenge him for that last defense spot in the top six. But I think Tampa is solid. I think that this collection of players under a lot of other coaches may not do as well, but I think we saw last year, particularly into the playoffs, that this is a great fit between the roster and Guy Boucher. At times, not the most exciting hockey team, even though they have some of the most exciting players in the league, but they get results. Which leaves the Washington Capitals as the division winner again in the Southeast Division. And I don't know that the fact that I'm saying they're going to win the division changes anything about how I feel they will do come playoff time. I know this will sound like a broken record for those of you that listened to the show last year and that listened to the preview, but I still do not think that Bruce Boudreau coaching this team with Alex Ovechkin as the captain, I do not think they will win the Stanley Cup. I think that we are nearing a time where a decision has to be made in the next few years if they don't win a cup as to whether Alex Ovechkin is really captain material. I think that he'd be far better off with maybe somebody like Brooks Like being the captain of this team. But I don't know how that will all play out if Ovechkin will give up the captaincy at some point. To me, the only way that Washington wins the cup is if you have a very similar situation to what happened with Pittsburgh several years ago, where there was a coaching change. Michel Therrien was blown out the door. Dan Bylsma came in, and things changed. And I think that's precisely what needs to happen. But the problem is I don't know that you have the personalities as far as your best players on your team. I don't know that they are the right personalities to really to be able to react as well to that situation as Pittsburgh did. I think Washington is a very, very good collection of players. But again, this isn't news to anybody. To me, they are still, even with some of the moves they made in the offseason, I still don't think they are a team that's built for playoff success. They may have gotten a little bit closer this year in terms of personnel, but I'm not sold. Obviously, you look at the projected depth chart up top, Knubel and Alex Ovechkin flanking Nick Backstrom, Brooks Like with Troy Brouwer and Alex Semin. A couple interesting wingers there. Troy Brouwer, I'll be very interested to see what Washington fans think of Troy Brouwer, because he's a guy who, over the last couple of years, has been near the top five in hits in the NHL. But he's a deceiving hitter in that it's not as if he's the type of guy that makes big hits that change the course of a game. Or, I mean, just as a Blackhawks fan, and I've always liked Troy Brouwer. He can shoot the puck. He does get into some horrendous slumps. But there are many times where I'll be driving home from the United Center and they'll be running down the score sheet and they'll talk about Troy Brouwer having 6 hits, leading the team in hits. And I'll think back and I really can't recall any of those hits being impactful. And if you had asked me after the game, I probably would have figured that he had 1 or 2 hits. So I'm not quite sure that the Capitals are getting the type of player that they think they're getting in Troy Brouwer. He's a solid player, don't get me wrong, but I don't know that he's the type of player that's going to put them over the top. Alex Semin, obviously, a guy that was much talked about throughout the course of the offseason by several of his ex-teammates. To me, Semin is just a disaster waiting to happen. He's, in terms of him, his long-term future with the team, I would be shocked if he's back. Maybe they'll sign him to another 1-year deal. But to me, Alex Semin is the type of guy that does not help you get closer to winning a Stanley Cup, even though he's got dazzling offensive talent. So you look at on the defensive end, and I guess offensively or up front, I like the addition of Jeff Halpern and the return of him to that team. I think as a fourth-line center, if he can stay healthy, which proved to be very difficult for him in Montreal last year, if he can stay healthy, it's a great pickup. Defensively, I mean, John Carlson and Carl Alzner, I don't think you can ask for much more in a D pair. I mean, these guys going forward, I think are going to be a Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook type of pair. Not exactly the same type of players, but that sort of defense pair. Mike Green, I think, falls firmly in the category, not quite to the level of Alex Semin, but another guy that he can be great offensively. He certainly leaves a lot to be desired in his own end, and I don't feel like he's a guy that you look back and think, wow, we won because of Mike Green. Also, Dennis Weidman. Roman Hamrlich, a solid veteran pickup if he can stay healthy, and Jeff Schultz. So, I mean, I think defensively they're in pretty good shape. I don't think there's much question that they're going to be one of the top overall teams in the league in most statistical categories. Although last year their goal scoring was way down, 19th in the league, it'll be very interesting to see what style Boudreau tries to employ after such a dreadful playoff performance last year. But really nothing matters as far as the Washington Capitals are concerned until the playoffs roll around. I'm sure that's how they feel internally, and I'm sure that's how their fans feel. As I look at the clock, I'm certainly not following my own advice to not go much over 30 minutes. So we really, when you look at the Northwest Division, there we may not have to spend a whole lot of time talking about the Northwest Division in the sense that the way I look at it, and I don't think this is a shock to many people, it's the Canucks and then everybody else. However, and I'll get to that as I work my way through, I don't know that it's going to be easy for the Canucks at the start of the season, but we'll start from the bottom. And Edmonton Oilers fans, I apologize because I know there's a lot of enthusiasm, rightly so, but to me, the Edmonton Oilers are clearly the fifth-place team in this division for so many reasons. To me, more than anything, it's goaltending and defense. You have a defense that was pretty horrendous last year without, in my opinion, a whole lot of help in sight. You look at the depth chart on defense, Ryan Whitney, who may be injured coming into the season, and Tom Gilbert. Then you have Ladislav Schmid and Andy Sutton. Cam Barker, who it kind of blows my mind that he got the amount of money he did, over $2 million per year, after getting bought out by the Minnesota Wild. A terrible trade by the Minnesota Wild when you look at the fact that the main cog coming back, at least in terms of a roster player coming back to Chicago in that deal, was Kim Johnson, who played three games, got a concussion, and most likely will never play hockey again. The fact that Chicago still won that trade off the acquisition of Nick Leddy in that deal tells you all you need to know about that swap. Nick Leddy's a heck of a young player, but the fact that Cam Barker has flamed out to the level that he has is certainly pretty sad. Theo Pekham, also in the mix. Jeff Petrie probably most likely in terms of guys that maybe be a seventh defenseman on that team. You look at up front, and there's some talent there. It's most of it very young. You have the return of Ryan Smith, obviously. Taylor Hall in the mix, Sean Horkoff, Alex Hemsky, Ryan Nugent Hopkins possibly making the team. We'll see how that goes. Jordan Eberle. The guy I'm most interested in seeing is Magnus Pjärvi, just in the sense that so skilled, but he had a real rough go of it, particularly maybe second half, maybe longer than the second half of the year. So be very interesting to see how he does. This is a big, big year for Sam Gagner one way or the other. Linus Omark, interesting in that it sounds like if he may have an out in his deal or a clause in his deal that if he doesn't make the team, he may not be long for Oklahoma City. He may be heading back overseas. One of the more puzzling contracts as well in the offseason, Ben Eager being given a 3-year deal. I always love the guy, having been a Stanley Cup champion with the Blackhawks, but I don't know. Ben Eager, 3-year deal for anything more than league minimum. Really, 1 year, anything more than a 1-year league minimum deal, I think, is overpayment there. I actually have fourth in the division. Another team that I'm not sold on what they did in the offseason. I guess in some level you have to give them credit for making big changes, but to me, they didn't make changes that made them demonstrably better. This being the Minnesota Wild, really the trade pipeline between the Wild and the San Jose Sharks, leading to Marty Havlat being shown the door, Brent Burns being shown the door, and coming back in that deal, Danny Heatley, or I should say in those two separate deals, Danny Heatley and Devin Setoguchi. I have never been shy about my dislike for Danny Heatley. His business dealings, but even more so just as a player in 2011, I think that, to use other people's words, I think he's a diminishing asset. I think you saw his numbers go way down last year. To me, his skating is not up to par with the top players in the league. He's another guy that when the going gets tough, Danny Heatley gets going, and I don't mean offensively. I mean out the door, or at least he disappears quite a bit. So I'm not sold on Danny Heatley. Devin Setoguchi is a solid player, a good player, but I don't know. I just have a feeling it's not going to be a great fit in Minnesota. I mean, you look at their lines. To me, this is one of the most offensively challenged teams in the league. A projected top line of Mikko Koivu, Danny Heatley, Pierre-Marc Bouchard. A projected second line of Colin Setoguchi and Clutterbuck. It's not a team that really strikes fear in your heart at all. Offensively, and if that top line isn't going, there really is not a whole lot behind it. And I think, and it's also a team that is not, I mean, this is a team that it's not as if they're at the cap floor. They're pretty near the salary cap, and they're paying a lot of guys big money, whether it be Mikko Koivu or Danny Heatley, that in Mikko Koivu's case, a very good player, but a $7 million player, I don't think so. So not a lot of wiggle room. And to me, it's, if you're going to be spending that much money, you need to legitimately feel like you're at least a playoff team, if not a Stanley Cup contender. And I'm not getting a real strong playoff vibe from the Minnesota Wild. Nicholas Backstrom and Josh Harding will tend the nets. I don't think there's a big problem goaltending-wise. Again, with the loss of Brent Burns and not a lot replacing him, to me, pretty thin defensively with Zielinski and Zanin, Schultz and Stoner, and the newly acquired Mike Lundin and Marco Scandella. You've got guys like Spurgeon, Prosser, several others waiting in the wings. They may have a pretty good defense in a couple of years, but I think it's going to be pretty rough going for the Minnesota Wild. I actually have above the Minnesota Wild the Colorado Avalanche. This is a team that It's weird because they had that miracle run to get into the playoffs, and they tailed off towards the end of the year. But this was a team that nobody expected to make the playoffs 2 years ago, and they were great for a long portion of that season. And then last year, they were okay for a portion of the year, and then the bottom fell out. They were horrendous. I want to say there was a 25 or 26 game stretch where they maybe won two or three games. Just awful. I think it's a situation where the reality of the Colorado Avalanche probably falls somewhere in between the previous two seasons. But when I look at what they've done in the offseason, and to me, I look at they're one of the few teams that their number one draft pick is going to be able to step in and play meaningful minutes. Gabriel Landeskog, I think, is going to be an impact player right off the bat. I think offensively, they were 18th last year. I think there's potential to improve on that. Really, I mean, if Peter Mueller comes back healthy, obviously you've got Matt Duchene, you've got Milan Hayduk. If Paul Stastny can have a better year, there is a potential for this to be a team that can score. Defensively, I actually, even though they lost John Michael Lyles, to me, he's an up-and-down player. I think there's attributes of his game that I like, obviously his offensive game, but he's so inconsistent defensively that I think they'll be able to weather it. Eric Johnson, to me, a lot of this team hinges on that deal, because when you give up guys like Stewart, you give up Kevin Shattenkirk in that deal, Eric Johnson has got to be a guy that is worthy of that deal. He's got to turn into a guy that was worthy of being the number one overall draft pick in a year that Jonathan Toews was also drafted in. So, you look at Eric Johnson, Jan Hayda, you've got Wilson and O'Brien, Quincy and O'Byrne, you've got guys like Kyle Komiski and Matt Hunwick coming up behind. If there's going to be an issue, it's going to be defense. They were 30th overall in the league last year. A lot of that was the horrendous goaltending situation in Colorado. I think they've improved that with Varlamov and Jaguar. They ridiculously overpaid in terms of assets given up to get Varlamov. I mean, when Varlamov was basically on his way to the KHL, and the fact that George McPhee was able to get, I believe it was a first and third round draft pick for Varlamov, that's a gross overpayment. But when you have difficulty developing from within in the goaltending position, you end up sometimes having to do crazy things like that. Although, I don't know, when you see what some other goalies signed for or other deals that were made throughout the league, it's the Varlamov deal raises some red flags. But Varlamov and Jaguar should be solid. Again, I think they're going to be good. I don't think they're going to... I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what they do. We'll see when I get into my conference breakdowns in a few weeks where I have them slotted as far as if they are one of those bubble teams or not. But I think there's more there to be excited about than there is with the Wild. I think the Wild are just a... I don't know. they seem to be a directionless team, and to me they have been for quite a while. I'm second in the division. I have the Calgary Flames. The Calgary Flames are a team to me that... It seems as though their management lives in a bubble and that they think they're close. I don't know that anybody else in the hockey world shares that belief. I do think this is a team that can contend for a playoff spot, though. I don't know that that really should be their goal as an organization. I mean, you always want to make the playoffs, but you look at their roster and you don't really see a whole lot of cause for optimism in the future and really looking... And we talked about this in some depth with Ryan Pike several months ago, coming out of the draft and going into free agency. The Calgary Flames, I think they had a pretty good draft this past year. Beyond that, the cupboard is pretty bare. The loss of Tim Erickson, who never was able to agree to terms with Calgary, that certainly didn't help. And you run down the roster. This is not a young team. You've got a depth chart that shows the top line as Backlund, Aginla, and Tange. You've got Olli Jokinen, David Moss, and Rene Bork. Langkau, Kostopoulos, and Curtis Glencross. Brendan Morrison, Tim Jackman, and Nicholas Hagman. Matt Stajan, depending on his health, also in the mix. we shall see. I actually, and this is another one of those teams that you look at their top D pair, and while Jay Bomeister has been a disappointment relevant to his pay, Jay Bomeister, Mark Giordano, you're fine with. I like Corey Sarich. Never been sold on Anton Babchuk, and you get down to a third D pair that has Butler and Carson listed. I'm not sold on this team, as I said, but I don't think that other than the Vancouver Canucks, there's really a whole lot better, in the division. The losses, the loss of Robin Regier, I think, is going to be massive. Adam Party to a lesser extent. I mean, he had really fallen out of favor, it seemed, with the coaching staff by the end of the season, to where he was almost a non-factor. Up front, you lose Freddie Modine, Alex Kotalik, which isn't really a loss at all. So, a team to watch, I actually think, as we get into talking about Vancouver, I wouldn't be surprised if for the first maybe month or two of the season, you see Calgary not all that far behind Vancouver. I think that coming off of last season, and can just use this to transition into the Vancouver Canucks, coming off of the regular season that they had, really leading the league in almost every statistical category. And then you look at the playoff run they had where they made it to the finals, but you had serious questions raised in the Chicago series. Obviously, serious unanswerable questions raised in the series against the Boston Bruins in the Stanley Cup Finals. To me, this is going to be by far the most fascinating team to watch at the beginning of the season, because really you have all the negative effects of going to the end of the season as far as a very, very short summer, and you have none of the benefits. You lose in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals in your own building in really the most crushing way possible. Then you have the added weight on your shoulders of everything that happened in the city immediately following the Game 7 loss. And couple that with you have Mason Raymond, who's going to be out for an indefinite amount of time. I would be surprised if he was back anytime soon. I mean, he'll play at some point in the 2011-2012 season, one would think, but I don't think he's going to be back anytime in the early part of the season. And you also have Ryan Kesler, who is out indefinitely in an interesting situation where it was obvious he was hurt in the playoffs. And if you're a Vancouver Canucks fan, I think you would have hoped that they would have recognized that surgery was needed and that they would have gotten that done earlier in the season rather than later, to where they're not really they're not going to have his services at the start of the year. I look at the Canucks and all I can think of is, and again, this is a little bit of my Blackhawks fandom shining through, but it really isn't. I'm not even thinking from those terms. I'm just thinking of if they had lost Game 7 against the Blackhawks, can you imagine how different this Vancouver Canucks team would look coming into this season? I mean, who knows what would have happened? I would have been shocked if Elaine Vigneault would not have been gone. At that point, would it have put Mike Gillis on the hot seat? If they had lost in the first round, let's say particularly if Luongo had had another terrible game in Game 7 of that series against Chicago, even though he has such a massive contract both in terms of dollars and term, I don't know how he would have been able to return to that team in that city as a starting goaltender. So it was a crisis averted in that way, but still, coming back to losing in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals, you really have to wonder the psyche of this team, no matter what Vigneault is saying about that. You know, fitness testing went great, guys are ready to come back. Some of the interviews, particularly with the Sedins in the offseason, to me, really, really make me wonder how easily they're going to be able to get out of the mental morass that they must be in after last year's playoff run. Because you think back to the Blackhawks last year. They win the Cup, obviously have a very good time over the summer, and come back. And I was struck by one of the things Duncan Keith said towards the end of the regular season, or may have been early in the playoffs, where he kind of made the comment that he had burned out relatively early in the season. And a lot of it, he said, was the fact that, you know, you go from playing in the Stanley Cup Finals where it's the absolute highest level you can be playing at. Your senses are at the highest of heights while you're playing those games, and then a couple months later you're back and you're playing a preseason game, or you're playing, you know, a game on a Wednesday night in the first, you know, couple weeks of the season, and he said it was just very hard to find that level again. And I really think that could be compounded with Vancouver, considering that, again, they went through all of that and they had nothing to show for it. So it's going to be a very interesting start to the season for the Vancouver Canucks. All that being said, I don't see any way that they don't win the division and win it handily. You look at the key departures, really to me the only one that matters. I mean, you look at some of the other departures, Rafi Torres, Tanner Glass, Jeff Tambellini, guys like that. I mean, people would argue Torres, but to me, over the long term, Torres is more of a hindrance than a help. Just in terms of you look at what he did, the hit that he had in the series against the Blackhawks, that really woke them up more than intimidated them. I think you can have players like that don't go over the line like he does. That can be as effective. But you look at the rest of their lineup, and for the most part, things are pretty much as they were. Obviously, the Sedins and Burrows, you've got, again, the second line, you look at the projections on the depth chart, and the problem is Kessler and Raymond are both hurt, and even if Raymond was healthy, there's questions as to he needs a bounce-back season after a disappointing season last year that was masked by the team's success. But depth chart-wise, they have the two of them and Marco Sturm, who there's a lot of question marks there. Malhotra, Samuelson, and Higgins. LaPierre, Yannick Hansen, and Andrew Ebbett. I would be surprised if either Victor Oreskovich or Cody Hodgson don't find their way into that into a role on the team. I think Ebbett is pretty likely to be more of a depth guy, probably play down in Chicago with the Wolves and be an injury call-up. He may start the season with the injuries to Kessler and Raymond, but I don't see any reason that Vancouver will not, like I said, dominate the division. In the end, much like Washington, the regular season, other than the fact that they have to get through it and obviously secure a playoff spot, the regular season is lacking a whole lot of meaning for the Vancouver Canucks, and particularly for Roberto Luongo. Chances are he's going to have a very good regular season. If he doesn't, God knows what's going to happen in that city with him, but it's all going to come down to the playoffs and whether he can find that level, because really, throughout the playoffs, it was feast or famine. It was great or, you know, however far from great you can describe a goaltender's performance. So, should be a fascinating year again, like I said, very similar to Washington, I think, as far as the just sort of having to trudge through the regular season. And don't think the players don't know that as well. And that's going to be Elaine Vigneault's job, is to keep the players from their minds from drifting too much. Because even though they're in an easy division and there's no reason they shouldn't win it, there are a lot of pitfalls when you're a very good team in that spot. So that is that. Like I said, a little bit longer than I was expecting to go. Quite a bit longer than I was expecting to go, but since we got the pleasantries out of the way early, I think that starting with next week's show, and particularly when we get into the regular season and we're through these previews, it'll be a little bit shorter. I'd like to thank you very much for joining us. Again, I apologize for the delay in terms of doing the shows over the summer. I ask for your understanding, and I hope that you'll be along the ride for the rest of the season here as we move forward. So with that, again, feel free to send an email to me at breakouthockey@radiostar.com or follow along on Twitter at @Adam_Summers. Feel free to let me know if you want to get involved with the Breakout Hockey Pool. If you were somebody that was involved last year and has not signed back up again, please do that. And also, if you want to get one of those couple of slots for new players in the league. I look forward to all that going down, and hopefully I can't say I dominated. I came from behind at the end, but hopefully I'll be successful, and we'll go from there. But with that, going to close out the show. If you're heading to any preseason games, as I am in the coming week, enjoy. It may only be preseason, but remember, the guys that you're going to see on a lot of those lines throughout the game are the guys that are very likely to be the stars of your team in a couple of years. So pay attention, enjoy it, and as always, I guess more than anything else, make sure that you keep it simple. Thanks for listening. Bye.